The 13 Skulls Podcast, episode number 9. Welcome to the 13 Skulls Podcast. In this episode, we're going to take a look at some pictures of a supposed prehistoric fish, an update on the chupacabra of Cuero, Texas, the dropa, an ancient global language, a couple of emails and listener call-ins, and much more than that in this episode number 9 of the 13 Skulls Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the 13 Skulls Podcast. I just want to kind of get right into it. Some of the things that I wanted to cover, just some formalities. The first thing is that there's a new player down at the bottom of the 13 Skulls Podcast website, the13skulls.com. Now, I know a lot of you probably already know about this player just because it's been there for a little while. I've been kind of busy lately, so it's been hard to get the show out, and I apologize to anybody who's been waiting for it. But this new player down at the bottom is by the Opus Project, and it's called the Opus Player. And it's a little confusing as to how to get the shows to play, at least I think it is, so I just wanted to go over it real quick just to let you guys know how to use it. If you go down to the bottom of the page of the13skulls.com, you'll see the player there. You'll see where it says singles, and it'll list the number of tracks. And it's in the right column of the player. Just click on it. As soon as you do click on it, it will immediately bring up a listing of the tracks of the shows, you know, that are there, that are in the feed. And it'll immediately start playing the very first show. If you want to skip to the next show, on the bottom of the left column, you'll see a play button and a skip to the next song, skip, you know, go to the last song. Just use the little, you know, skip to the next track button to go to the next track, to skip all the way down to the bottom of the, you know, to the bottom of the list. It'll go numerically in order from the first show to the last show. The first show's at the top, the bottom, the most recent show is going to be at the bottom. So just, you know, use the little button there next to the play button to skip to the next track and just skip all the way down to the most recent one. So anyway, I just like it a little bit better than I did the last player that I had on there. So just wanted to give you a little bit of info as to how to use that player. Also, I'd like to say, go visit my friends out at ErieRadio.com. Those guys have a really great show. And, you know, if you haven't heard of them by now, go take a listen to them. They're at ErieRadio.com. Most of the people I think that listen to the show have already heard of Erie Radio or came to my show from Erie Radio. But just in case you haven't heard of them, you guys really need to go check them out. Those guys have just a great show. So go give them a listen. It's at ErieRadio.com.
Erie Radio, opening the door to the unknown. Download episodes of Erie Radio directly from iTunes or visit their website at www.erieradio.com.
And another thing I wanted to talk about, just real quick, is that shows number 1 and 2, the first skull and the second skull, the episodes number 1 and 2, I archived them on the Podomatic site. So what you're going to have to do if you wanted to go back and take a listen to those first two shows, they're still there to listen to. They've just been archived. So they're not going to be on the main page. So what you're going to have to do is if you go to the13skulls.podomatic.com, scroll down till you see the little calendar on the right sidebar, and you'll see where it says archive. So you'll see a little calendar, and it's actually listed as being the program archive. It's actually just above where all my friends are listed at, and just below how to subscribe to the podcast. So you'll see down at the bottom of the calendar, you'll see where it says archive. Just click on that, and it'll take you to any of the shows that have been archived and are not on the main page. So I just want to let you guys know about it, that they're not gone. They're not gone. They're not, you know, taken away. They're still there. You just have to go to the archive page to be able to listen to them and see the show notes and everything. So I just wanted to let you guys know about that. So anyway, I'll quit rambling, and we'll go ahead and get on with the show. All right, well, the first couple of things that I wanted to take a look at here were some emails that I received from some of the people that have been listening to the show. The first one is from Christopher. He sent me an email, and he's in Rhode Island. He says, "Hi, TJ. I just wanted to say that I recently started listening to your show, and I really enjoy it. I just finished listening to your Halloween episode, and it had a lot of interesting topics on it. Between your show and Mysterious Universe, I'd definitely get a satisfying feel of the paranormal. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to the next episode. Chris from Rhode Island." Well, Chris, thank you very much, man. I really appreciate the feedback. I really appreciate the fact that you enjoy the show. Again, this show is just something that I, you know, throw together just because I enjoy doing it. It's not something that I'm trying to do to make any money. It's not something that I'm trying to do for any other reason other than the fact that I enjoy it. So just wanted to say thanks to Chris for sending in an email. I really appreciate the feedback, and let me know that you enjoy the show. And the next email that I got was from April, and April says, "Great show. I'm going to listen to it again," which I believe she was talking about the Halloween episode. It says, she says, "You sound so professional." I think I said it before, and she asked me if I was a news reporter, but she was laughing about it. I think she's just making a joke on it, but no, I'm not. But anyway, thank you, April. It says, she also says, "It would be awesome to have more episodes to listen to, but I'm also, I also have a podcast, so I know it takes a long time to get a show together." She says that this is one of her favorite podcasts, and good job. Well, April, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that. That you think I sound so professional. I really do appreciate that, because I don't really try. I mean, all I do is I just, you know, this is my normal voice. This is how I normally am. So, I really appreciate the kind words there. April said that she also has a podcast of her own, and it's called Believe It or Not. It's at believeitornot.podomatic.com. You guys could go take a listen to it. She says that she's not promoting it yet. I really think that it might be a good show. So go take a listen to it, and I'll go take a listen to it, and we'll let her know what we think of her show. But April, thank you a lot. I really appreciate the feedback, and let me know what you think about the show. And the next email that I got was from Molly. And Molly says that she just subscribed to the podcast yesterday evening and says that she's addicted. She thinks it's great, makes her work day brighter. Thank you, Molly. I really appreciate that as well. I'm glad that I can give you something to listen to make your work day better. Believe you me, I understand. I listen to podcasts all day long at work, so I know how it is to have a podcast that you enjoy listening to at work. It really does make the work day go a lot faster and a lot better. So I'm glad that I can add to the brightness of your day. So anyway, thank you, Molly. Thank you, April. And thank you, Chris. I really appreciate the feedback that you've given me to let me know what you think about the show. All right, and the last email that I wanted to take a look at was from Travis. And Travis actually has his own podcast at eor.mixin.com. I'm not sure exactly how you would say that, but it's eor.mitxin.com. And the name of his podcast is Edge of Reason. And Travis says, "Wanted to touch base with you and let you know I'm listening out of OKC, Oklahoma City. Really enjoy the show so far. I'm pretty skeptical by nature. However, I'm completely fascinated in the paranormal. It's pretty funny looking at the links in your show. I pretty much subscribe to the same roster of podcasts." I think that a lot of people subscribe to the same podcast that I do. I usually give just just about every podcast out there to listen, and those are just my favorite ones. So you can go to my favorite podcast and take a look at them on my webpage. But he says, at any rate, you seem like a really cool guy and really into the paranormal podcasting community. It said that he actually started his own podcast before he stumbled onto my podcast. That his podcast, which he does with a buddy of his, is called Edge of Reason. It says we're both fascinated by the paranormal, but try and look at the paranormal and cryptozoological topics from the viewpoint of a believer as well as a skeptical take on things. Again, you can take a listen to his podcast at eor.mitxin.com. It's Edge of Reason, and you guys should go take a listen to his show. I know I'm subscribed to it, so go take a listen to it, and if you like it, let me know. If you like it even more, give him an email and let him know about it. The rest of his email says, I've actually been podcasting in various forms and shows since early in 2004. I've always wanted to do a podcast covering the paranormal and whatnot, but at first I hesitated because it was so much already out there. Finally, though, I figured that there's a million different podcasts or a million different television shows out there that cover the same topic or whatnot. So, what's the harm in throwing my hat in the podcasting ring, dude? I tell you what, do it. Throw your voice out there. Who cares if there's 10 million podcasts out there that cover the same stuff? Throw your opinion out there. Just because you're covering the same topics doesn't mean you're going to give the same opinion. So I say, give your opinion. Cover the topics that you want, and who cares what anybody thinks. Do it for the fun of it, and enjoy it while you do it. His email also says, as far as the 13 Skulls podcast goes, I think I've listened to the whole back catalog and enjoyed them all. Take care and keep on keeping on. Well, thanks, Travis. I really do appreciate that, man. There's not too much of a back catalog of shows. I apologize for not having more of them out there, but I really do appreciate the feedback and letting me know that that you really enjoy them. So it makes me feel a lot better to know that people out there actually enjoy this show. But again, I don't really try to do this show for any other reason other than I enjoy it. I'm getting a lot of downloads and a lot of listeners now, so I know that I need to get the show out there for the people so they can listen to it. But at the same time, I do it at my own pace. I do it because I enjoy it, and then that's pretty much the only reason. So, nonetheless, I just want to say that I really do appreciate the emails and the feedback. Chris, Travis, Molly, April, I really do appreciate the feedback. So again, thank you. There's also a couple of listener call-ins that I wanted to take a listen to, and the first one is from Abby, and basically Abby let me know that she's calling to keep my phone line active, because I have had an issue with the phone line going inactive a lot in the past. So here's Abby's call-in.
This is Abby. I was listening to your podcast, and I figured I'd give you a call so your phone line didn't get cut off again. My friend and Unzi were totally freaked out. Thank you.
So again, thank you, Abby. I really do appreciate you calling in to let me know that you're going to try and keep my phone line active. I appreciate the fact that you care enough to take even just 10 seconds out of your time to call my phone line, and I appreciate that you listen to my show. I really do. I can't say that enough to anybody out there who listens to the show. If you enjoy it, thank you for listening. So, Abby, I appreciate your call in. The next call in is from Ed from Fort Worth. Ed, I really do, again, I can't say this enough, appreciate you calling in. So here's Ed's call in.
Hi, TJ. This is Ed from out of Fort Worth, Texas. I just want to say that I love your show, big fan of your show. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I'd like to share an experience of mine with you. This was about 8 years ago, give or take. It was a lunar eclipse going on, something like that, some event like that at night. This was out of my parents' house. We get out the video camera, and we're going to shoot the eclipse. I'd say it was going on about due northwest, northeast. Over here to the east or to the southeast was this in the sky was this orange orb. I see this orange thing in the sky. So I turn to shoot this, and I have to zoom in pretty far to get a good a better look at it, and I could see what looked to be a corner, like a single corner, you know, of some thing, you know. I shot this object in the sky for a good 10 to 15 minutes, you know, until the point where my arms just started hurting, so I put the camera down. Well, I hadn't put it down for very long. I told my sister, I turned to my sister or my brother, and I told them, hey, you shoot this, you know, look up there. And when I looked up to find it, pointed out to them, it was gone. Nowhere to be seen. They'd seen it before. They'd seen it when I pointed it out earlier, when I first began to shoot it. It was gone. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. And I just want to say again that, you know, enjoy listening to your podcast. You know, keep up the good work. You know, I'd love to hear some feedback from you. All right, well, take care. Thanks.
Well, Ed, I really do have to say, man, I think that's a great story. I'd love to see the video that you had filmed with that. So if you ever get a chance to put it off on your computer or download it, upload it, whatever you can do, I'd love to see the video, if you even have it at all. I know sometimes those things can, you know, be recorded over or lost or whatever. But if you ever do get a chance to upload the video, send it my way. I'd love to take a look at it. And, you know, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to post it too. But again, I know how it is. Sometimes those things get lost. But your call-in reminds me of some fading lights that I've seen recently. I've been seeing some kind of strange things lately. The few things that remind me of that call-in, the story that you just said, was I was standing out on my back porch and I would see these lights appear in the sky, and they would be stationary at first, and they'd be pretty bright, and they would come out of nowhere. I mean, you can notice something like this, especially whenever you're sitting there looking up at the sky. You know what's up there and what's not. You know what stars are where, and you know what's up in the sky, if there's any planes flying around or anything like that. Well, a couple of times so far, I've looked up in the sky, and I've seen this bright light just appear out of nowhere, and it's stationary. And then it'll slowly move off to the right and just fade away. I have absolutely no idea what it is. If anybody's got any ideas as what it could be, I know it's not a plane, because I live in Dallas-Fort Worth. I see planes flying overhead dozens of times a day, so and at night, so I know what to look for when it comes to being a plane, so I have no idea what that was. But again, thanks for the call, Annette. I really appreciate it. And thanks again, Abby. I really appreciate it. Thanks to everybody. I know I've said I appreciate it 10 million times in this show so far, but anyway, those were you know, some of the call-ins and some of the emails from some of the listeners of this show. Again, if you want to send me an email, it's at feedback@the13skulls.com. You can also send it to the13skulls@gmail.com if you feel like it too, if you already have that in your address book. And if you want to give a call-in, the number is 206-338-2205. So give me a call-in or send me an email. I'd love to hear your stories, feedback, comments, criticisms, whatever. So you know, that's it. Just let me know what you think about the show, and if you have any stories to tell, I'd love to hear them.
I look back on the day, anguishly obscene, not me needless. Never rest from telling that you didn't take my every move. Dare you never enjoy. Resist my interest. Reluctant.
Alright, well, now that I've rambled on for ever and ever, I want to go ahead and get into the show. The first thing that I wanted to talk about was just something that I've kind of given some thought to recently, and it was something that I thought about on my way home from work, was parallel universes. I can't remember really how this came to mind, but I was on my way home from work, and I had an idea about how, if parallel universes do truly exist, how are they situated in this overall dimension or universe, or whatever that you would consider it. I mean, if they're all expanding at the same time and moving in different directions, can they pass through each other? Can they interact at all? If so, if they do interact at all, is that where shadow people come from? Or are shadow people just demons or ghosts? I'm not really sure exactly how they would interact with each other. I mean, do parallel universes not necessarily parallel each other? Or are they using, are they using the same space and time? I mean, do parallel universes just strictly mean that they're not necessarily paralleling each other like two lines or two roads would, but they're more or less just the same things happening, but in a different universe? Are they expanding in different directions? Are they expanding in the same direction together at the same time, in the same space and time? It's kind of a confusing topic to really sit back and think about it. For that matter, are we even in the same time as other parallel universes? I mean, what I mean by in the same time is, I mean, right now, are the parallel universes in the same timeline? I mean, is the version of me in another parallel universe the same age and doing the exact same thing, recording a show right now? Could it be that dinosaurs are alive in a parallel universe at the exact same time that I'm alive, that we're alive right now? Are parallel universes, could it be that the Earth and the universe are being created in another parallel universe right now? Or parallel universes in the same time frame? I was I don't know. It's just a confusing thing. If anybody's got any ideas on parallel universes, I mean, I know that mathematically they've proven that parallel universes could exist. But to be honest with you, the word parallel is what's getting me. There could be other universes out there, which, you know, wouldn't surprise me a bit, but if they're parallel to each other, does that mean that they're just on the same time frame? I mean, do they actually take up the same space? Now, I know that you can't have, well, I guess you could have two things taking up the same space at the same time if they're in different dimensions. But, I mean, is that where shadow people come from? I mean, is it just that we're happening to be interacting with other people? Is that what ghosts are? Is that what, I mean, does anybody have any ideas to anything as to how parallel universes could exist? And if so, do they interact with each other at all? Because to be honest with you, I can't come up with any logical explanation if they do interact with each other at all or not. So if anybody's got any idea on that, you know, give me a call in, shoot me an email and let me know, because personally, I'm confused. All right. Well, one of the first things that I wanted to talk about was a haunted theater that a friend of mine, Anthony, who's also a coworker, forwarded on to me. I'll post up some of the pictures and I'll read you kind of the story as to what he sent me. It says, back a couple of years ago, we were going to rent this old theater to build a nonprofit haunted house. It's located in Fort Worth in a very old part of town, and it's been rumored to be haunted by the local businesses. There's a restaurant to the left in one of the pictures that you'll see, and some of the employees told us of strange noises and of their cars having transmission problems, electrical problems, and, you know, et cetera, just having general problems with their cars. So we scouted the location and spent a few days inside. We never had anything out of the ordinary happen besides strange creaks and howls, but we attributed it to the wind passing through the boarded up windows. Not until we looked at the digital images that we took did we see the orbs floating all around us. A lot of the orbs aren't visible until you brighten the images, as you'll see in the auditorium shot. In one picture, you can see my sister with a video camera. When we viewed the video from that day, you can see that the orbs were actually floating and not a result of a dirty camera lens or from lens flare. Another strange thing about the video is that there is static interference, and the video actually distorts and scrambles, and at no other time the camera performed in this manner. I'm not sure if these images will make you a believer or not, but these are the closest I've come to actually feeling as if I've captured paranormal activity on film. Now, I can't disprove that that orbs are ghosts. I can't disprove that they're not just dust flying around the air. But these pictures you'll see are of the Berry Street Theater in Fort Worth. Now, seeing as how this place is so close to where I live, I'm definitely going to have to go check this out. A couple of guys, Anthony and Edmundo, that I work with, we're actually going to have to plan to go take a look at this place and scout it out some more. So if you guys are listening to this show, Edmundo and Anthony, we definitely got to go you know, make a visit to this place and see what we can see. Well, the first there's quite a few really good pictures. This place looks really, really creepy. I mean, it looks really old. Doesn't look like anybody's really been in there for a long time. But there's some really good orb shots in here, and there's one of an orb that's moving up the stairwell. It says that we did feel cold breezes brush past us, but then again, we thought it was the wind. And, you know, the wind could be the cold breeze that you felt. It also could be the reason that the orbs are flying up the stairs. Now, in two of the different pictures that you'll see, one is like looking up from the balcony over some chairs down into the theater. And up at the top of the picture, you'll see one really bright orb. And there's a couple of different pictures, and one of them, it looks like this orb is the same orb that's in two different pictures. But then again, I don't know if it's just the wind or if it's just dust or what it is. But personally, for me, the most intriguing picture is you'll see a picture of a little red table that's got dust all over it with some things on it and a chair sitting next to it. And just above the chair, you'll see this strange looking light of some kind. It's not really bright. It's pretty much dead middle of the picture, just above the table and the chair, maybe just a couple of feet above the chair. And I mean, it looks very strange. I don't see how you would get this light as a reflection from the flash, because the way that the wall is, I wouldn't think that you would get a reflection like this, because it's an old, dirty wall. It's not like you're looking into a mirror. It's not like you're looking onto a glossy painted wall. It looks like a pretty, you know, dull wall. So I don't think that you would get any type of reflection off of it. And the caption on his picture says, kind of looks like the orb is from someone sitting in that chair. And it really does. I mean, it could be. It really could be somebody sitting in that chair, and they're just coming across as a kind of a light refraction of some kind. But then again, I mean, maybe it was something on the lens of the camera. I think it's an intriguing picture. I really like it. It's one of my favorite ones that he sent me. You guys should let me know what you think about that picture. I'll post them up, and you know, just give me some feedback, and I'll let Anthony know what you think about his pictures. There was another one that says, in the next couple of pictures, is the room where my sister said that the red chair pictured, you'll see a red chair next to the old movie cameras. It says it moved back on its own as if someone had sat in it, but we weren't there to see it, and it's not captured on film. It's still spooky. Now, it is kind of spooky. This old place looks really, it looks really interesting. I'd like to go see it. I love old places like this. It's just an old theater that hasn't been used in a really long time. But what you'll see is you'll see a little red chair next to a couple of the movie cameras. You know, the cameras that actually hold the film and project the movie onto the screen. But he says that it moved, said that his sister said that the red chair moved back on its own as if someone had sat in it, which, I mean, it really would make sense that, I mean, if you were the one who was operating the camera, you would have to sit next to the camera to make sure that it was playing right the whole time. So it would make sense that if someone had died and wanted to stay at the theater and they would continue to show movies, you know, that they would sit down in this chair. So they're really good pictures. It looks like a really great place. If we do decide to go back there, I will most definitely post up any pictures or audio or anything like that we get. There's a lot of pictures of, there's a few pictures of the stairwells that have orbs floating in them as if someone's going up and down the stairs. It's really cool. There's one picture that he's got that says the auditorium is full of activity, and on the video portion of this footage, the orbs look like they're in the audience patrons filling the seats. It's really neat. I'd love to see the video. I'm going to have to see if I can get you to get Anthony to get the video for me. I'd love to see it because the pictures are intriguing because this place looks great. I mean, it looks like there hasn't been anybody in it for a really long time. And what you'll see again is that it's a picture of what looks to be from up at the top of the seats, from the very back rows of the seats, and overlooking the balcony overlooking the theater. And there's just orbs everywhere. Now, again, the skeptical side of me is coming out. I think that maybe it was possibly just orbs, but just dust. So, a place like this is going to collect a lot of dust. It's going to collect a whole ton of dust. And if anybody's torn down any walls or trying to do any renovations, you're going to have that much more. I mean, the place is kind of dirty, kind of decrepit. It looks like it hasn't been well taken care of or used in a really long time. But they're cool pictures. They're really great. Thanks for sending them in to me, Anthony. I really appreciate it. I'll post some of them up so you guys can take a look at the Berry Street Theater. And, like I said, if we do decide to go out there and we get any audio, video, or pictures or anything like that of anything abnormal, I'll be sure to post them up there. But again, Anthony, I really appreciate it. Thanks for sending that in. And you guys take a look at them. And, if you got any ideas, skeptical criticism on what the orbs could be or anything like that, shoot me an email or give me a call in and let me know.
Take your last look at me. It's more than you should ever say. In time the memories fade, but in the end they never go away. What I've been told is that your life was so. Put the barrel to the back of your head. Pull the trigger and know you're dead. Come along with me.
The next thing that I wanted to talk about is courtesy of EnglishRussia.com, and it's pictures of a prehistoric fish found in a Russian pond. It says, look what they found in Chelyabinsk City. The story is that there was a construction site with a deep foundation ditch. They have touched some underground river in that place, so the water in the ditch didn't go away. It stayed there full of water. Some workers a few months later spotted some movement in this water. They threw some pieces of their lunch in the trench, which caused a big activity inside the water. They were puzzled what is in there, and caught one thing up. Then, in big panic, stepped away because it tried to bite them. So they had to kill it with some equipment, and here are the remains of it. It was about 5 feet long. None of them got any idea. Nobody's got any idea of what it is. And, it kind of looks like, I don't even know what to explain it as being. I couldn't really find any good articles on here that could explain any more than what you just read. And to be honest with you, the English in the article, the little caption that I read, isn't all that great. So, you guys should go take a look at it. It does look like some kind of a prehistoric fish. I can't tell you exactly what it was called, but it doesn't look like anything that I've ever really seen before as being alive. It kind of looks like it has lobster legs and a really long tail with this big hardened shell covered body on the front of it with a long tail, and it looks like it has tons of legs. Even in one of the pictures, it's kind of blurry as if it's like flapping around. Now, it's hard for me to believe that this thing would be 5 feet long. I mean, that had to be a really big animal for it to be 5 feet long. The pictures themselves kind of make in, just the size of it. It doesn't look like it's maybe more than a foot too long at the most. But you guys should go take a look at it and let me know what you think. There's not too much that I can really find. It says that there's a lot of feedback down here on it, and it says that it could be a horseshoe crab. And to be honest with you, it does look like a horseshoe crab. A horseshoe crab is considered to be a living fossil, as far as I know. But then again, some of the people on here say that it's not a horseshoe crab, and it looks totally different, not to mention it has more legs. But I don't know. I'm not really sure exactly what it is or interesting pictures. You guys should go take a look at them and let me know what you think. And if anybody has any clue whatsoever as to what this is, shoot me an email or give me a call in and let me know, because honestly, I'm kind of confused as to what it is. It does look like a horseshoe crab. Does have a lot of legs, has a really long tail. It does appear in the pictures to be a real living live creature. So if anybody's got any idea as to what it is, let me know. I'm not a scholar. I don't know a lot about animals. Cryptozoology is not exactly my strong point. I do love cryptozoology, but I'm not really knowledgeable as to what a lot of animals are, what they could be. So if anybody's got any idea as to what this thing is, or if it's been faked and it's not real at all, or, you know, if anybody's got any more evidence, or, you know, anybody can prove or disprove what this thing is or has any idea of what it could be, you know, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of subversiveelement.com. And it basically talks about a Congo dinosaur. Now, if anybody doesn't know what the Congo is, Congo's in Africa, and it's kind of a rainforest type of area. Now, the article itself is pretty interesting. It's neat to know that there possibly could be a dinosaur out there. But the article says, from the early 1600s, European travelers in Central Africa have reported the existence of a monstrous mystery creature. According to Abbé Priort, a French priest who published a history of the African interior in 1776, missionaries have seen tracks with claw prints that were at least 90 centimeters, or about 3 feet in circumference, and over 2 meters apart, is a little bit more than 6.5 feet. Pygmies inhabiting the Lukula or Lukuala swamp lands of the Congo claim to have seen this mysterious animal, which they call in their native tongue Mokele Mimimbe. Mbembe, I believe. Eyewitnesses account describes a huge, timid beast that spends a great deal of time in the water. It's said to be the size of an elephant, with four thick, sturdy legs, a slender 3 meters or 9.8 feet long tail, and roughly a 5.9 foot or 1.8 meter long neck with a small head. On land, the beast leaves a distinctive three-toed footprint, a characteristic of certain types of sauropod dinosaurs, but unlike the tracks of any contemporary animal species. When shown the pictures of living and extinct creatures, the pygmies pick sauropods, such as the Apatosaurus, also known as a Brontosaurus, as the closest match to the Mokele Mbembe. Hopefully I'm saying that right. It's Mokele-Mbembe. So if anybody knows how to pronounce that correctly, let me know. If I'm butchering it, I apologize. But it also says similar reports come from the neighboring Cameroon and Gabon, where the animal is known as Nyamala, N-Y-A-M-A-L-A. Discovering species thought to be long extinct alive is not without occurrence, nor is the Congo unique in its claim of living fossils. In 1938, off of the coast of South Africa, a fish was caught that was later identified as a coelacanth, which until the time had believed to have been extinct for 60 million years. In Zambia and Zimbabwe, people are afraid of the flesh-eating Kongomodo, a flying lizard with a great wingspan and a long beak filled with teeth, much like the extinct pterodactyl. Since the 1980s, several scientific expeditions have searched for the conclusive evidence that the Mokele Mbembe, I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right, really exist. One investigator, Roy Mackle, a professor of zoology at Chicago University, took teams to the Congo in 1980 and 1981 to search for the elusive creature. Although they failed to encounter the beast, they collected important anecdotal evidence, including information on its primary food source, a type of vine. And in 1985 and 1992, British explorer Bill Givens added further local reports to the ever-growing dossier. Mokele Mbembe Mbembe, I'm not even sure, like, again, I think I'm butchering that to death, may not only be the only living dinosaur inhabiting the Congo. One is a triceratops-like monster called Emila Nkuta. Emila Ntuka. The other is a bizarre creature described as having planks growing out of its back, which the pygmies identify as Stegosaurus. Could some dinosaurs have defied evolution and still be living in the Congolese swamplands? Who knows? It says only future explorations will tell, but it's hard to discount these myths out of hand, especially when stories of cryptozoological creatures come from all over the planet. I don't know. I think if dinosaurs were alive anywhere in the world, on land, that we would have seen them. I mean, I can understand Bigfoot. I can understand anything like the prehistoric fish that we just saw. I can understand if something that's not of humongous size was still alive. Like, you know, I mean, crocodiles are still alive, and alligators, and they've been around for millions of years. So I can understand if something of that nature, of that size, was around, then maybe we wouldn't have found it by now. But something the size of a brontosaurus or a triceratops or a pterodactyl or a stegosaurus or something like that, something that's of just huge, just monstrous size, I think we probably would have seen it by now. I think there would have been some evidence to say that it's alive. But then again, there's a lot of this planet that goes completely uninhabited, that's completely, you know, untouched by man. So it could be that these animals are still alive. But then again, I would believe that after 60 million years or however long these animals were thought to have been extinct, that we would see a little bit more of a growing number of them. But then again, it could be that they don't have enough land to really spread out far enough to make a big population. I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical thinking that dinosaurs are alive. I would be more inclined to think that Bigfoot would be alive than I would think that that dinosaurs of this magnitude would still be alive. But then again, you know, who's to say whether, I mean, I've never been to the Congo. I've never seen any of the footprints. I've never seen any of the evidence saying that that something out there of this size is alive. So if anybody wants to give a comment on it, or if you know more information about it than I do, let me know. But those are the Congo dinosaurs. Spring is at your back again, but this time rare with clarity. While past the dot hole burned up, still been tall, you woe and flesh there in. Yet if you'd have let the worst most be, as if it were lost, you would go. And no one's out there scared, but set your eyes off on the ceiling all night in the dark. Think of a song, or maybe press, or missing body parts. Without a universal law, there is no gravity. Without no gravity, there is no atmosphere. Without an atmosphere, there is no chance in life. No chance in life. I don't exist. Without a universal law, there is no gravity. Without no gravity, there is no... All right, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is kind of revisiting the Chupacabra of Cuero, Texas. And this article is courtesy of Fizorg.com, and that's P-Y-S-O-R-G, Fizorg.com. And the article basically says that that it's a coyote, that the DNA has come back, and that is really no more than just a like a mangy coyote. I think it's interesting that that they actually did do the DNA on it. The article says Phyllis Canyon holds the head of what she is calling a chupacabra at her home in Cuero, Texas. She found the strange-looking animal dead outside her ranch and thinks it's responsible for killing many of her chickens. The results are in. The ugly, big-eared animal found this summer in Cuero, Texas, is not the mythical blood-sucking chupacabra. It's just a plain old coyote. Biologist at Texas State University announced Thursday on November the 1st, so it has been a little while, that they had identified the hairless dog-like creature as being a coyote. The DNA sequence is a virtually identical match to DNA from the coyote, says Mike Forstner, who's a biologist, said in a written statement. The big ugly dog is just a coyote. I mean, I've never seen a coyote that looked like that. Now, I heard an interview with Phyllis on the Paranormal Cafe not too long ago, and she basically wants to do a little bit more as far as trying to figure out exactly what it is. I don't think that the topic is dead to her yet. I think she's still got a lot to take a look at in this animal as far as you know what it really is. Now, granted, it does have a virtually identical match to the DNA of a coyote, but who's to say that Chupacabra isn't some kind of a distant relative of the coyote? I don't really know. I just thought it was interesting that they actually were able to disprove it, that it really is just nothing more than a coyote. And who's to say that, you know, it didn't have some kind of weird, strange disease to make all of its hair fall off and to make its skin that rough grayish color. More like a hide than fur. But I'm glad to see that science has put a hand down and basically made this, you know, into nothing more than just a coyote. They've basically said that, you know, that the DNA proves it. So I'm glad that science is able to disprove that this really isn't a chupacabra. So if you guys want to go take a look at it and see what I'm talking about, it's courtesy of fizzorg.com, and that's the debunked Chupacabra of Cuero, Texas. All right, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of ParanormalPalace.net. And basically, this is astronomers have discovered a fifth planet circling star 55 Cancri. Cancri, I'm not sure how you would say that, a star beyond our solar system. The star now holds the record for number of confirmed extrasolar planets orbiting a planetary system. The 55 Cancri, or Cancri, however you want to say it, is located 41 light years away from the constellation Cancer, and has nearly the same mass and age as our sun. It is easily visible with binoculars. Researchers discovered the fifth planet using the Doppler technique, in which a planet's gravitational tug is detected by the wobble it produces in the parent star. NASA and the National Science Foundation funded the research for this. The associate administrator for the science mission directorate at NASA headquarters in Washington, Alan Stern, says it's amazing to see our ability to detect extrasolar planets growing. We are finding solar systems with a richness of planets, a variety of planetary types comparable to our own. The newly discovered planet weighs about 45 times the mass of Earth, may be similar to Saturn in its composition and appearance. The planet is the fourth from the 55 Cancri, and completes one orbit every 265 days. Its location places the planet in the habitable zone, band around the star where the temperature would permit liquid water to pool on solid surfaces. The distance from its star is approximately 72.5 million miles. It's just slightly closer than that to the Earth is to the Sun. But orbits a star that is slightly fainter. Now the Earth is about 96 million miles away, I believe. It says that the gas giant planets in our solar system all have large moons. If there's a moon orbiting this new massive planet, it might have pools of liquid water on a rocky surface. I know this isn't exactly paranormal, but I thought it was interesting to know that science is discovering more and more and more planets out there that are orbiting stars that could potentially inhabit life. It says, discovering these five planets took us 18 years of consistent observations at Lick Observatory, starting before any extrasolar planets were known anywhere in the universe. But finding five extrasolar planets orbiting a star is only one small step. Earth-like planets are the next destination. I really hope that they find some planets that have life on it. I'm really looking forward to it. I just thought it was interesting, so I thought I would read it to you guys and let you know what I thought. the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of UFODigest.com. And the article is called Giants, Myth or Reality? And what intrigued me so much about this article is, I mean, everybody's heard about, you know, David and Goliath, the whole giant thing, but the picture for this article is just amazing. Now, who's to say that it's not just a faked picture that somebody put together? But I thought it was interesting, to say the least, because you see this picture of a human skeleton, and it doesn't really look any different than, you know, any other skeleton that you've ever seen, but there are two people standing next to it. What's so surprising about it is that the people are no bigger than the head of the skeleton. It said the caption on the photograph is Bhima's son, Gattakak, like skeleton found. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it's a monstrosity of a skeleton. Like I said, the two archaeologists that appear to be digging this thing out are no bigger than the skull of the skeleton. This thing looks monstrously huge. So I just thought the picture itself was intriguing. Now, who's to say that it's actually real? I mean, it could be photoshopped. I don't know. I've never seen or heard of any actual skeleton being found of this size. Now, the article says, in the human experience, giants are literally the elephant in the room. When our researchers first began on this paradigm, we had little knowledge of how extensive the evidence of their existence was. We now have a comprehensive database consisting of over 200 historical descriptions, over half from the United States and the UK history alone. And our unpublished files contain enough information to more than triple the current data we now have online. We were one to undertake a thorough study of giants and record all in detail, it'd certainly be a life's work. The lack of the presence of giants in Orthodox history, academia, and anthropological studies is appalling in the light of the true historical records from every part of the globe. Even more mysterious is the seemingly unanimous decisions by the keepers of the world's museums and archaeological treasures to keep the physical evidence of giants hidden from public view. Another conspiracy. Only a smattering of the evidence is available in obscure locations. Thousands of skeletons and hundreds of historical reports are ignored. The accepted knowledge among the world's peoples is that giants are the creatures of myth and folklore, relegated to children's fairy tales and B-grade horror movies, and it's almost a crime not to include a giant in any fantasy film or video game. The reality is that giants were present throughout our history, from ancient biblical accounts and historical Roman military campaigns to the relatively modern genocide of the natives of North America. Giants appear in the legends of Australia, Bavaria, Belgium, Chad, Chile, China, England, France, Germany. I mean, there's a whole ton. It goes all the way back to the Nordic cultures, just to name a few. Giants are everywhere in our religion, our history, our literature, and our folklore. Legends of extraordinarily tall humans are found in almost every culture and in almost every continent. But they are always viewed as mythical beings. Jack and the Beanstalk, Paul Bunyan and his giant ox, the travels of Gulliver, and familiar children's stories in English literature. There are festivals dedicated to giants. They are represented in paintings, statues, and rock art, and even more in the Catholic Church has its own giant saint, Saint Christopher, who was so tall he made a living as a human fairy, transporting people on his shoulders across deep rivers. That's interesting, to say the least. But anyway, I won't go off on too much on this because, I've seen really tall people. Maybe it's just that, over a long period of time, it wasn't feasible or, you know, there wasn't enough, food to sustain people of that size, which, you know, I mean, sometimes large creatures, just like dinosaurs, die out, just because they're too big or whatever. I'm no archaeologist. I'm no historian or anything like that. I'm just a normal guy who likes to find crazy articles like this and let the world know about them. Like I said, you got to go check out this article. There's a whole lot more there to read, and you got to check out the picture. The picture is just stunning. I mean, it's amazing. If somebody did this with Photoshop, they did a damn good job of it. But my apologies for the for the rough language there. You know, this isn't necessarily a family show. It's not necessarily not a family show. But anyway, you guys should go take a look at this picture and read the article. And if you have any ideas on giants as far as whether they're myth or reality, let me know.
Hey, this is the Paranormal Cafe out of Westchester, Pennsylvania. You can listen to us at paranormalcafe.podomatic.com. And you are listening to the 13 Skulls podcast at the13skulls.com.
Now, in one of the prior episodes, I took a real quick look at the Dropa. So I want you guys to go and take a look at this article too. There's a lot of stuff there. But basically it says a team of archaeologists were conducting a very detailed routine survey of series of interlinked caves. Their interest had been excited by the discovery of lines of neatly arranged graves, which contain the skeletons of what must have been a strange race of human beings. Strange because they had unnaturally spindly bodies and large, overdeveloped heads. At first, it had been thought that the caves had been home of a hitherto unknown species of ape. But as the leader of the team, the Chinese archaeologist Professor Chi Pu Tai pointed out, "Who ever heard of apes burying each other?" Studying the skeletons that one of the team stumbled on a large round stone disc half buried in the dust in the floor of the cave. The team gathered around the discovery, turning it this way and that, looking at it absurdly like kind of Stone Age gramophone record. There was a hole in the center of it, and a fine spiral groove radiated to the rim. Closer inspection, however, showed that the groove was in fact a continuous spiraling line of closely written characters. The object was a record of sorts, in more ways than one. Only nobody at the time, the year was 1938, possessed the key to its incredible message. The disc was labeled and filed away among other finds in the area. Even those who knew of the existence knew nothing of its meaning. Many experts tried to translate the hieroglyphs in the 20 years the disc languished in Peking. They failed. It was not until another professor, Dr. Sun Nui, broke the code and started to decipher the speaking grooves that the extraordinary implications of the disc were realized. Realized, that is, only by a select few. The outside world remained in ignorance, for the professor's conclusion on the meaning of the disc were so shattering that they were officially suppressed. It's interesting. The Peking Academy of Prehistory forbade him to publish his findings. 2 years later, in 1965, the professor and four of his colleagues were finally given permission to reveal their theory. It appeared under the long-written, long-winded but intriguing title, "The Grooved Script Concerning Spaceships," which, as recorded on the discs, landed it on Earth 12,000 years ago. The record, 716 of the grooved discs were later uncovered in the same caves, told an astonishing story of a space probe by the inhabitants of another planet which came to grief in the Bayan Kara Ula mountain range. The strange spiral script told how the peaceful intentions of the aliens had been misunderstood and how many of them were hunted down and killed by members of the Ham tribe who lived in neighboring caves. According to Sun Nui, one of the lines of the hieroglyphs read, "The Dropas came down from the clouds in their aircraft. Our men, women, and children hid in the caves 10 times before sunrise. When at last they understood the sign language of the Dropas, they realized that the newcomers had peaceful intentions. Another section expressed regret by the Ham tribe that the alien spaceships have crash-landed in such a remote and inaccessible mountain, and that they had... that there had been no way to building a new spacecraft to enable Dropa's return to their own planet." This is interesting. It says, "Did the discs actually record an abortive space mission by alien astronauts 12,000 years ago? Nearly all the landing space spectaculars are all nearly all the leading space spectaculars. Theorists like Eric von Daniken and Peter Colosimo believe so. For one, accepts the proposition that aliens may have already visited Earth. Then it follows that some of their space probes must have failed, and the astronauts must have been destroyed. I don't know. I think it's interesting to think that they actually did land here. It's got an interesting picture here too. It's an old black and white picture. These people have strange face. They're really interesting. The photo that I'm talking about was taken by Dr. Carol Robin Evans during his 1947 expedition. Shows the Dropa ruling couple, Hiapa La, who is 4 feet tall, and Vies La, who is 3 foot 4 inches tall. Interesting. I mean, these people don't really have oversized heads, but they really have close eyes. Their faces look different. It's interesting, to say the least. You guys should go take a look at it. This article is courtesy of BurlingtonNews.net, and it talks about the Chinese Roswell, another story about the Dropa stones. It goes on to talk about new evidence of the Dropas, which there is so much here to read. There's no way I could go through it all. Go and take a look and do some reading and let me know what you think about it, because I mean, there's a lot here to read. There's more than I could. It'd take me an hour to go through and read all of this. So you guys should go take a look at it. And it's the Alien Crashes, Dropa Crash of 10,000 BC, a strange race of human beings. So go ahead, take a look at the Dropa, and you know, if you decide to read it all and you got some information on it, if you want to, you know, if you got ideas on how to prove it or disprove it, you know, or whatever, if you just want to, you know, give your opinion or whatever, just go read it. It's the Dropa and how they crashed here 12,000 years ago. Alright, well, the last thing that I wanted to talk about, as far as articles or anything, is courtesy of paranormal.about.com, and it's talking about the first tongue, an ancient global language, which I thought was really interesting, to think that everybody who was on the planet would have spoken the same language. Now, I can kind of understand how you could have one language for everybody. If, let's say that back in the day, I believe it was called Pangaea, something like that, where all the continents were connected together and that it was just one large landmass on the planet, I can understand that if everybody was on this one planet, that you know, that you could possibly have one common language for everybody on the planet. Now, it shows some drawings, some carvings on some rock faces of these just weird different shapes. Some of them look like animals. Some of them look like mathematical symbols. Some of them just look like things that you've never seen before. Some of them look like they potentially could be aliens of some kind. Who knows? But the article itself says in the last part of the 20th century, a handful of archaeologists discovered a collection of symbols carved in the stone as petroglyphs that appeared to be writing. Dating of these symbols showed that they were made over an extended period of time, beginning around 1700 BC, and located on as many as five continents. This unique collection of symbols was first examined in the Negev Desert of Israel by Dr. James Harris, a brilliant archaeologist from Brigham Young University. He identified the alphabet as being a proto-Canaanite system, which successfully translated by using Old Hebrew and Talmudic phonic sounds. The earliest examples of these writings were described as graffiti left by workers of a turquoise mine. Later, excellent examples were found in a mining site that collapsed and remained intact from around 1500 BC, thus establishing establishing a can't speak today, thus establishing a date from carbon dating of wooden beams used to support the tunnels. In the late 1990s, William McGlone, an amateur archaeologist and retired space engineer, discovered the same collection of symbols carved in a heavily patinated stones surrounding the southeast town of La Junta, Colorado. Dating of the patina corresponded to the same era as the writing found in Harkarkum in Israel. McGlone documented the locations of his writing before his untimely death in 1998. Prior to this, he gave many of his maps and notes to Gary Vey, editor of ViewZone. Vey was able, with the help of Dr. Harris, to successfully translate many of these old petroglyphs and develop a computer program to do this in the field. In 1999, ViewZone visited and photographed the petroglyphs in Colorado and posted them on the internet. Within a few years, images of similar petroglyphs were sent to Vey by archaeologists and historians from many different global locations. This included a refined and huge collection of writing from the Republic of Yemen at the site of the Palace of the Queen of Sheba. Vey was immediately invited to visit the museum and archaeological sites in Yemen and photographed as well as translated many of the older stones and bronze artifacts. The writing in Colorado and Yemen spoke of some event possibly related to the sun, which was prophesied to change human civilization. Subsequent translations of sites in Oklahoma, Australia, and South America have added more details about this future event. However, the present report is meant to describe and illustrate this ancient writing system, which we are calling First Tongue. Now, there's no more to this article, and I can't really find a whole lot more to it. So if anybody knows anything else about these, this First Tongue, this ancient global language, if you got any more, resources or anything that I can find any more information about, I'd love to talk about it some more and find more information on it. They're really interesting to take a look at. Now, I guess it would be more of a symbol recognition as far as what the symbol would mean rather than it actually being some kind of writing or anything like that. Or I guess it would really depend on your own personal view of what writing is. It is writing because technically it is written out, but they're more like symbols rather than words. So I guess it would be more like, what to me sounds interesting is if it's a global language, then you would have to speak it, right? I mean, at least I would think you would have to speak it. And if you would speak it, how would these words be spoken? You know, these symbols, how would you verbalize them? And how on earth would you break the code as to what these symbols mean? Oh, that always did confuse me whenever people would crack a code of some kind, how you would figure out what these mean. I mean, to me, it would be open to interpretation as far as what you would think. I mean, I could say that these symbols mean anything, and I would never really know unless I would find some kind of documentation as to what each symbol means. But anyway, I thought it was very interesting that there was possibly at one time a global language that everyone would speak. I mean, they found these things in Oklahoma, Australia, South America, Colorado. I mean, they found them all over the place. So it's interesting to know that these same symbols would be would go all the way around the world. But then again, it would make sense that at one time you could have possibly had a global language. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm no historian. I'm no scholar of any kind. I just thought it was interesting. So if anybody's got any opinions on the ancient global language, let me know what you think about the First Tongue.
Hey, 13 Skulls listeners. This is Jay, also known as Soli Jay. I'm sure you're all interested in all unknown subjects. So if you have a few minutes, please feel free to visit my podcast at solij.podomatic.com. Now back to the show with your host, TJ.
All right, well, everybody, I appreciate you sitting back and listening to the show today. I know it probably wasn't the best show. Kind of had to throw it together at the last minute, but I thought it was some interesting topics. But anyway, if you guys have... You know, any ideas, comments, experiences, or any feedback at all, call my comment line at 206-338-2205 and let me know. Or you can email me at feedback@13skulls.com or the13skulls@gmail.com. So I guess I'm just going to have to go ahead and start closing this show out. If you'd like to give this show a vote on Podcast Alley, I'd really greatly appreciate it. There are voting links on both the right sidebars of both the13skulls.com and the13skulls.podomatic.com. I had a lot of people sign the Frapper map lately. I greatly appreciate everybody signing the Frapper map. It's finally back up and running, and thanks to all the new and old people who've signed up on the Frapper map. And there's quite a few new people. I've got getting quite a response on the Frapper map. I really enjoy it. I love seeing where people are listening from or where you're located at. Also, if you listen to this show through iTunes, I would greatly appreciate it if you would go and give me a review on there. I've only had a few people review it so far. A few of the reviews have been 5 stars. People absolutely love the show, which I greatly appreciate you just even taking any time at all to go and write a review. One review was only 2 stars. The guy said that he doesn't think that I'm skeptical enough. I say that I believe and that I feel that I feel as if I am somewhat skeptical. I do believe in things that most people don't. I am kind of skeptical, but at the same time, I can't disprove or prove most of the things that I see for the simple fact that I have to go on what other people say and what other people can show me as far as evidence. So I believe in a lot of things. I'm also skeptical in a lot of things. I believe that what we see in our everyday life isn't exactly the full story. I think there's a lot to it that we don't see, we don't hear, we don't experience in any way, shape, or form, because I think our mind is blocked to a certain degree due to societal beliefs that throw up walls in our minds, so we don't, we only believe what we're told and what we're told to believe. So again, even though it was, not a stellar review on iTunes, I appreciate the guy, giving me a review and telling me what he thinks. If he doesn't think I'm skeptical enough, that's great. At least he's listening to the show. But if you think I'm too skeptical or not skeptical enough or too much of a believer or not believing enough, write a review. Let me know. Let me know what you think. If you listen to this show through iTunes, I'd greatly appreciate you going and writing a review. So either way, thanks to everybody for writing a review that has. So, also, if you like the music that's in today's show, it's courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet, which is at iotaalliance.com. There'll be links to all the music in today's episode on the website, so you can go and you can download all the music from today's show. But if you really like the music and you want to buy the whole album, or if you want to buy more music, there's links to be able to go to IOTA to be able to buy all the music. Again, it's courtesy of IOTA Alliance or IOTA PromoNet. It's iotaalliance.com. So anyway, I just wanted to say thanks again to everybody who's called in, everybody who's listening to the show. Thanks to Chris, Travis, Molly, April, Ed, Abby, everybody who's called in or left an email or written a review on iTunes or anything like that. I just wanted to say thanks to everybody for listening to the show. So I guess that's the end of episode number 9. Again, thanks for listening to the show. Try to have a great week, day, weekend, night, whatever it is that you're listening to the show. And again, as always, I will talk to you again on another day. To build your own self-esteem. I found it fucking hostility. I'm so pissed off and you fell off away from me. You got it all wrong, but this will take long. Victimize your lie, open up your fucking mind. To live your life just like there's no end in sight. You won't pass a chance to take on a fight. You wanna tear me down and beat little me. I'm not a threat to build your own self-esteem. Well, back the fuck off of me. Yeah, back the fuck off of me. Now back the fuck off of me. Yeah, back the fuck off of me.
Self.